Welcome to Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time. For women who have walked away from faith, the challenges are often overwhelming, isolated, abandoned by family, misunderstood by partners, ostracized by friends, shamed for thinking critically, cursed for speaking out, subdued by the patriarchy. Thank you for joining us today as we provide a platform for women to speak up, to speak out, and to share their stories, because their stories count. Their stories matter. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Leah here with you today, and we have the extreme pleasure of having Jessica with us. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning.
How you doing today?
I am all right.
Good, 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 good. So it's a cold Friday morning here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I know you're in a different part of Ohio that's even further north. So I'm sure it's even colder.
Yes.
out there by you. And I just keep saying, like, spring has got to be right around the corner.
I'm hopeful. I'm in Northeast Ohio, so we get all the lake effect stuff.
And ouch.
It's just brutal.
Yeah. I grew up in like the Buffalo, New York area.
Oh, yeah.
So I know about that lake effect snow stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, yesterday, the area that I'm from, like they like shut schools down like the night before, which is such an unusual occurrence, right? Because they've got all the trucks and all the plows up there that unless it's like blizzard conditions, they have at it. So anyway, so Jessica, so tell me about, I don't know, your life growing up in a family of Christian fundamentalism. What's your earliest memory of religion and of church?
I did grow up in a fundamentalist Christian family. My grandparents, extremely religious Christian. We were going to a very large church in Akron, actually. And I mean, it's got thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Wow.
And they were very involved because they have a lot of money. So they were donating a lot of money to the church and so forth. So my grandparents, they helped raise me. Okay. So I spent a lot of time at their house as a kid. Mm-hmm. And they had other grandkids. They have other grandkids too, but they were living overseas as missionary kids. So I was kind of the grandkid, that was there, that they were able to do things with and spoil and all that kind of stuff. So, so that was kind of my like really early, religious type of thing was going to church with them. Mm-hmm. And being very involved in church every Sunday, sometimes Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And then I started going to a Christian school I think I started actually in kindergarten. And then first grade, I started off in a public school. Mm-hmm. But then I was transitioned into a Christian school in the middle of the year. So So I grew up in a Christian school all the way through high school.
Wow. And did that Christian school, did the theology of it line up pretty closely to the church that you were attending?
So the Christian schools I went to were non-denominational. And the church that I went to was also non-denominational. You know, kind of like this generic but still a lot of like evangelical, a lot of outreach type of things, a lot of support for missionaries all over the world. you know, lots of classes to participate in.
Yeah, I bet.
So
your home was you lived close by your grandparents, it sounds like.
And I was about 20-30 minutes away, and my dad raised me mostly. So my parents had divorced when I was little, really like 5 or so, but my mom had left us when I was 3.
Okay.
So he was kind of tag teaming it with my grandparents, and he did, when I was little, he did a lot of work overseas. Mm. So I, spent a lot of time with my grandparents when he was overseas.
Wow. Okay. And like, so I too, as a child, spent a lot of time with my fundamental grandparents. Mm-hmm. And they were like this rock of stability in my life.
For sure.
Because my parents, you know, had a tumultuous relationship as well. They remained married until I went off to college. But my grandparents and the faith that they exuded, right? I attributed to this peace. I felt this peace when I was in their home because there was some sort of comfort. And I thought that was due to their religion, right? Yeah. That in my home of origin, we didn't have. And so from an early age, I was kind of like drawn in that there must be something about this religion thing, this Christianity thing that I was missing and that we were missing it at my house.
Yeah.
So for you, your dad was religious too?
Like we went to church. He went to church and, you know, he was involved, as he could be, you know, at my school. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, Christian fundamentalist. So, and I would say even to this day, he's religious, although he's quiet about it.
Yeah.
He definitely has his Christian beliefs.
Yeah.
The practice, I think, is a little off. but it's there.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So your mom was in and out of your life during these years, and your relationship with your grandparents, was it your mom's parents or your dad's parents?
It was my dad's parents.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so did you feel close to them? Like, were they people that you trusted and admired and respected? And
for sure. Yeah. I had so much chaos going on at home. And so when I was at my grandparents' house, you know, just like what you said, you know, the kind of that stability, right. that place that you can go to, that you know is going to be a safe spot. At least that's what you need and at that point in time. You know, like, it's what you need when you're that age. Yeah. Is you need some stability.
Yeah. That Maslow's hierarchy of needs thing, right? Our physiological needs need to be met. Our safety needs
to
be met. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
And so, according to the bio you sent me, you know, you struggled with depression and suicidal ideation at a young age in like elementary school.
Yeah.
And so what do you attribute those struggles to?
My mom, is unmedicated bipolar manic depressive, and she was in and out of my life a lot. When she was in my life, I don't have any good memories of her. And I don't know if that's because I'm blocking out some things. But the bad memories I have of her, there's a lot of domestic violence, police officers, and you know, physical altercations between her and whoever she was dating or married to at the time. And that would be, you know, it, it would be sporadic. It really depends on how stable the person she was with was. Okay. So like if she was, at one point she had been married to a bar owner. So he had his own business and they were married at least for a couple years. So I would spend every other weekend or, you know, in the summertime, weeks at a time, with her at the apartment above the bar.
Okay.
Which was interesting. A lot of exposure to a lot of things.
Yes.
You know, like I was, like learning how to play pool at, you know, 8 years old from, you know, these drunk old dudes, but then going to a Christian school at the, you know, during the week and hearing about, you know, how lovely Jesus is and all that. Yeah. So, so there was like a lot of, weird things that would happen.
So I'm thinking about like from your father's perspective at the time and your grandparents, even like that, like the boundaries set up with allowing your mom into your life. So like, how did that, it must've been very difficult for your dad to try to know what to do at the time.
Yeah. And I think he was pretty focused on just supplying a mother for me. And I think he felt like a mom was better than no mom. I tend to disagree. I'm sure it was difficult for him to know what to do. However, I also wasn't really terribly forthcoming about what was going on.
So he didn't necessarily know the crazy cuckoo that was
I mean, he was definitely aware that she had crazy moments and crazy things. I don't know if he is even to this day aware of how much I had been exposed to.
Right.
It was just never, I don't really ever recall talking about it. Mm-hmm. And so that played a big part for me in my suicidal ideation at, you know, being 8, 9, 10 and, you know, standing over a bathroom sink with water running and I've got my hair dryer going and I'm thinking, well, it wouldn't be that hard to do. You know what I mean? Like all these kind, just always thinking of a way out, you know? And it was odd. It was, and I was never, I never really talked about it either. You know, like I remember at one point I had a guardian ad litem. I had never talked with her about those things. I had never been sent to counseling or, you know, or therapy or anything as a kid. And my dad also too has a big temper. So like there were times when it would be a little terrifying for me as well. You know, being in the house with him when he's got this big temper and, you know, punching a hole in the wall or, you know, having to pick up a glass that he shattered or, you know, whatever. It was always just me kind of like picking things up. It didn't matter if I was with my mom or with my dad, there was just always something. And then, he was dating, I think. And he had gotten remarried when I was, 10, I believe.
Okay.
So, and that was a whole other thing that really played into, this, you know, these suicidal thoughts.
Yeah. Right. Cause at that time he was spending more time and energy with this other woman, this other person. And I can assume that maybe made you feel even more isolated and alone.
Yeah. I can remember he would go out on a date and I would be at home by myself when I was nine, you know, just kind of sitting there in front of the TV on a Friday, Saturday night. And, you know, and he's out on a date, which I didn't think of anything of it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just, it's just what parents do.
Right.
I don't know. It was just my life. Right. I mean, whatever.
Trying to figure out how the world works. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, it's all weird to me. And I guess this is just how it is. Except for my friends at school, their life wasn't like that.
Yeah. Right. And so like during this time, like, how were your grandparents like interacting and like looking out for your well-being?
Yeah. I never shared anything with them about stuff. I was many times told not to. I was many times told not to say what I, you know, share what I wanted to share, share about these things that were happening. Because I don't know, I probably backlash. My grandparents, my grandfather passed away years ago, but my grandmother's still around and they're, filthy rich. So, I think some of it too, just had to do with, my dad wanting to maintain an image of, you know what I mean? You know, so he wouldn't be cut off from the family.
Right.
And we're talking about, you know, a guy who has two perfect sisters who are missionaries and, you know, and kids and, stable marriage. And, here's my dad who very much feels like the black sheep in the family, who has given birth to a, well, he didn't give birth, obviously, but he's got a kid who's also a black sheep. So, you know, it's just, I think it was just very much him trying to maintain this image.
Yeah. Gosh. And in that for you, right, you ended up being taught and told to be quiet and not share your heart or be truthful with others about your intuitions. And yeah, and that's tough stuff. And it seems like, I mean, I'm just getting to know you, but it sure seems like you've learned over the years that that wasn't the best way to live life, and that you've learned how to do those things and to speak up for yourself and for your children.
Yeah. So I tend to be pretty vocal nowadays. you know, much to people's dismay, I suppose. But there's a reason for it. You know, I don't like, being kept in the dark. I don't like, also not being able to ask questions. I don't like, trying to hide things. And it obviously there's a difference between things that are very personal, you know, like I'll share them with people who are close to me or whatever, but, but I'm also, you know, like I'm not going to actively try and hide things.
Yeah, no. I mean, we did that for too long.
Yeah, for sure.
And what no good comes of keeping things in the dark, you know, there's nothing positive about that. We're just protecting abusers.
Yeah.
You know, like there's nothing good about that. And so I applaud you and your bravery for finding your voice and for being authentically you, you know, it's an inspiration. And I have the pleasure of working with, I have two teenage daughters and I have an 18-year-old, a 21-year-old and a 23-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I look at them, like, I don't want them to be quiet about who they are or about what they believe to be true about the world. Like, it seems just such a terrible way to live. And so we're changing the world slowly but surely. One voice at a time, one woman at a time, raising our voices.
We got to give birth to those changes, apparently.
Yeah, that's right. Literally and figuratively.
Yep, yep,
amen.
Yep.
Amen.
I'm born in blood.
Yeah. So you, in high school, were still involved in the church and at your Christian school. And were there any doubts about your Christianity or your faith during those years?
No, actually, I had a lot of questions. Mm. I never doubted. I had a lot of questions that I knew could be answered. I just needed to find the right people to answer them.
Okay.
People who knew what the hell they were talking about, or right. So I thought, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It kind of more of that searching for some stability, you know, when everything is going to shit. Yeah, I don't remember ever really questioning whether or not the gospel was true. Right. I mean, it was true for sure. Yeah.
You knew beyond a shadow of a doubt it was true.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and the benefit to that is having stability, is having that foundation that's a rock, you know,
right.
That no matter what shit I went through over the weekend with my mom, or the abuse that I went through with stepmom, or all that kind of stuff, no matter what, there was always the gospel. There was always God. There was always Jesus. That was always going to be there no matter what.
Right.
So no, I definitely did not.
Yeah. And so were you able to find at that, like these questions that you had, not the doubts, but the questions that, were you able to find people that could give you quality answers?
Yeah, eventually.
Okay.
So in high school, you know, I had transferred to a Christian high school that a lot of kids that I had grown up with also transferred to. So, which was kind of nice, I guess, for me, and the fact that, you know, I wasn't losing some of my friends.
Right.
And we're talking about private school, you know, private Christian school here. So it's not like you just go to the same district. I mean, the school was a good, half hour from, initially from where I lived.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What was your question?
So like finding people who could help answer those questions.
Yeah. So, I had started, marching band. I was a trumpet player. And, for 8 years I was a trumpet player, and, I was good. And, I started, taking private lessons with, trumpet teacher there at the school, who had turned down a position at the Cleveland Orchestra to teach kids here at this Christian school. And he was very religious, for sure. He was teaching Bible classes. Mm. So by the time I got to 10th grade and I was taking a Bible course with him, and we had to, every semester we were in a Bible course. When I was taking them with him, we were already very familiar with each other, you know, cause I was having private lessons, and, and he was my marching band teacher, and you know, all this stuff. So, he started, talking to the students about the Jewish roots of Jesus. Mm. And I was like, well, shit, that makes sense. You know, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, talking about the geography of Israel and how that was able to shape the history and the culture. Back in Jesus's day and beforehand, you know, all this stuff. And it just clicked with me. And a lot of the questions that I had were able to be answered, you know, finally, you know, okay, I get some clarity to some of this stuff, because it's not making sense. I know there's an answer. There's got to be an answer. So he, when I say I clicked with it, I mean, it was like a deep, like soul clicking thing. He recognized that in me. So he invited me to go with him and a group of people to Israel. Hmm. So, and it's a scholarly tour. And one of the best biblical scholars in Israel is a very Jewish dude. Wow. Who took us all around Israel to all these different biblical sites and Roman sites and such. And that summer between my 10th and 11th grade year, a lot of stuff fell into place for me as far as getting my questions answered.
Wow.
It was really a very deeply personal and eye-opening thing for me at that point.
Mm-hmm. And was it, I mean, also just comforting to you, like to be able to kind of put some answers together for the questions that you had and like bring some stability into your life that you hadn't had before? Or what did it do to you emotionally to be secure that you had now found these answers?
I think what it did was give me some direction. Mm-hmm. You know, I was feeling pretty directionless, aimless, in my, you know, in my walk with Jesus.
Yeah, right.
Feeling, even though like I was, like I had been to charismatic churches with my mom, mm-hmm. Which are a whole nother thing. holy crap. you know, I've been to those, you know, I'd been slain in the spirit and I had, you know, been endowed with, what is it? Speaking in tongues.
Speaking tongues, yeah.
And, you know, all this stuff. So really very genuine. Like I cannot stress this enough. Like if there's a Christian in the world, like it's me. Like I'm super Christian. Give me a cape.
Oh my gosh. Amen, sister. How many of us found our way out of faith about that at some point? Like, yeah. Oh my gosh, I've got it figured out. Yeah.
Many, many of us, for sure.
I know how you should then live. Yeah. Gosh, yeah. And it's interesting because like for me, one of the things early on that kind of fucked with my stability was the fact that there were so many different brands of Christianity that were all doing things differently and had different ways of going about worshiping Jesus. So here you have this introduction to charismatic church via your mom, mm-hmm. your non-denominational church, your grandparents and your dad, and now this Jewish version of Christianity.
Yeah.
And so did you feel like you had just finally found this was the way that you were supposed to worship God Almighty?
Yeah. And logically it made sense to me. Because, you know, here you've got Jesus and he's saying all this stuff and you're like, what the hell is he talking about? Because, you know, he's in a very specific time and a very specific place and, you know, a very specific culture. And, you know, there wasn't really meant for our ears, right? I mean,
right.
And then to be introduced to all these other factors that you don't find in the Bible, you know,
right.
you don't find it in the Bible. You find it in Israel when you're staring at the same thing that, you know, Jesus stared at.
Wow.
And it's totally different. And I got really angry actually with I got really angry with American Christianity.
Hmm.
I mean, I still am, but for totally different reasons.
Right.
you know, just very angry with American Christianity because it was like, there's a verse in the Bible talking about milk and meat. Mm-hmm. And to me, American Christianity was all about just drinking milk, and there was right. no graduation to meat. You know, there right. was, there was no, there was no oomph to it. Yeah. You could fake all the oomph you want, but it just wasn't there. So, but by the time I had gotten to Israel and such, well, I found the oomph.
Wow. So how long were you in Israel that first time you went?
So I think that first tour was a little over 2 weeks. Oh, wow. And I had come back for my 11th grade year. Mm. And fired up all that wow. kind of stuff. And I started challenging my Bible teachers.
Yes. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Which
does that go over? How'd that go over?
Yeah. You know, like I was doing exegesis in 11th grade on different passages. And I was... God, good God. I was bringing in all kinds of like history and geographical facts and cultural facts. And my Bible teacher at the time was like, didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Because even though like he was working with, you know, his coworker was the person who taught me about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. There was a real disconnect. Mm-hmm. Between that, you know, that particular teacher and, you know, my other Bible teachers after yeah. that. So, there was just a real big disconnect.
Wow. So they didn't know what to do with you.
They didn't know what to do. You. Oh, I had red marks all over my exegesis. I mean, let me tell you.
Oh my gosh. And yeah.
And these are people who like went to seminary and such.
Right.
Now, so
you know some of these answers to these yeah. questions you're bringing.
I'm like, these are simple questions that could be easily answered if you just go back to, you know, where the hell Jesus was, you know, like, come on.
Oh my gosh. Doesn't that just kind of point to, I interviewed April a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm. she kind of went through a similar journey to you mm-hmm. in that, you know, she was, you know, fundamental Christian, and then she became Messianic Jew, and then she became Jewish. And like at one point she was like making charts. Like she was studying this so intensely, right? The history mm-hmm. and the scripture and the Torah, mm-hmm. all this stuff. And she was like making charts that she was taking in to show like her pastor and like the leaders of her church, say like, no, look at like, you know, no, this is the way it is. And she was accused of making or what would they call her, a cult chart maker or something like that, right? They gave her this like, you are a cult chart maker. But like, it's very difficult when those who are supposed to be an authority over you and know more than you do,
yeah.
who don't even have the basic fundamentals of what it means to be a Christian, whatever the hell that means, but
right, this is a wide interpretation. As it turns out, yeah. Leah, I don't know if you know this, but
oh God, help us! God, help us! So you went back to Israel then? Was that the next summer?
Yeah. So then I went to Israel again for my second tour between 11th and 12th grade, and that was a much different trip for me. Because I had gone through a very difficult time, mm-hmm. at one point in my 11th grade year. And I had moved out of my house, from my father, and I, had moved in with my grandmother. Man, it was a very difficult time. Mm-hmm. And during my 11th grade year or so, I got involved with a family outside of, my high school, outside of my normal Christian world, who, were very religious as well. And, I wouldn't say religious, they're very spiritual. Okay. And they, the husband of that family had actually gone with me on my first tour to Israel.
Oh, wow.
So that was how I knew him.
Okay.
And he has like 9 kids or something like that. Oh, I mean, just a big family. And and his wife was like the shit. Like, she was just awesome.
Wow.
And I had been starving for family.
Yeah, right.
And they welcomed me with open arms. I mean, so I was over, like, most kids my age in 11th grade were like going to the movies or, you know, going out to eat with their friends and, you know, doing like normal 11th grade type of stuff. And here I am on the weekends, like right after my marching band, you know, Friday night football nights, and I'm driving 45 minutes out to their house to spend the weekend. And we would, like, we would hang out. We would, I was very close with the parents. I was not with the kids. I was kind of indifferent about the kids.
All 9 of them.
Yeah. There's a lot of kids. Jesus. But the parents I was really close with, and they were very welcoming. And I just had a lot of love for them. Cause they gave me what I needed at that time. Which, you know, was love. I mean, they really did.
Yeah. Wow. That's beautiful. Yeah.
So I, they, I don't know. You know, we would, like, on a Friday, Saturday night, we would listen to some gospel music and read the Bible. And, you know, I'd be slain in the spirit, all this kind of stuff. And, it eventually, got to the point where I was able to open up more about some of the stuff that had happened to me. And I opened my mouth up to the wrong people. And it turned into a whole thing where I ended up moving out.
Wow.
From my dad's and moved in with my grandmother for a little while. And I had part of the bargain, I suppose, to move past these events was that I give up this family because there were concerns that they were brainwashing me. And which was heartbreaking. It was very emotional time. So I had given up that family because they said, it's give up the family or you don't go to Israel. For the second tour. And it was, I didn't know what to do. I mean, I'm, how old am I? I'm
16,
something.
Right.
I mean, this is totally new for me. I mean, and I, my heart's desire is, you know, to go back to Israel to get my questions answered and to really experience, to really experience God.
Right.
And I did what I had to do at that point, and I gave up that family.
Oh,
and
what a terrible choice you were confronted with.
Yeah, and when I gave up that family, I had emailed them one last time, and I said, you know, don't worry, I'll be back. You know, I'll be back. But you know, till I go through with the second tour to Israel and everything. And then, so I went on that second tour to Israel, and it was just a very different kind of trip for me because of the stuff that had happened. And at that point, for some reason, butterflies really were a thing in my life. Like, for some reason, butterflies would like show up at certain points. I don't know why. I look back on it and I'm pretty sure that I was like hallucinating. I don't know. It could be anything at this point. Who the fuck knows? So And, you know, I'm standing there in Israel and I'm looking out over Megiddo Valley in northern Israel. And, you know, and in the Bible, Megiddo Valley is where Armageddon takes place. Oh, and it's, yeah. And like historically, Megiddo is a very bloody place. I mean, you're talking like thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who have died in this valley, this Megiddo Valley, like over the course of, you know, thousands of years because of the way the land is shaped. You know, like you go the path of least resistance, which is that valley. And so a lot of people were killed. And here I am standing, looking over this valley, and I see like this white butterfly like go across in it. And I just burst into tears. And the lady who headed the tour, I was very close with her. She was a mentor of mine. Mm. And she, you know, was just kept hugging me. She knew what was happening, what was going on. And, you know, she had a lot of love for me, for sure. Mm. And all this stuff that was happening. So, and it was just a, at that point, like it was a very spiritual moment for me. It was very genuine. And it hit me in a way that my previous tour to Israel never had. Mm. Because, you know, it for me, it was about perspective. Mm. You know, so I'm looking over Megiddo Valley and you have all these, all this historical bloodbath that goes on there. And at that point, it was, and at the point that I was standing there, the valley is just lush and green and beautiful. Wow. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And they like do a lot of farming there. Mm. And, you know, because farming and blood is great. And I don't know. Anyway, so it had offered to me a new perspective on the situation that I had gone through.
Wow.
And yeah.
Wow. Like a perspective that like God was there with you.
It was a perspective of like, these things pass, they're temporary and
okay. Here's new life comes.
Yeah. And here's the big picture.
Yeah.
Armageddon is going to be in this Megiddo Valley. And let me tell you, you know, like rain, hellfire, you know, so it, for me at that point, it was this perspective of longevity. Okay. So wow. It was, sharing the gospel with as many people as I could before, Armageddon.
The time came. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know how to explain things such as butterflies. And for me, after my dad died, it was dragonflies, right? There were dragonflies everywhere that summer when I went to the beach, you know, 600 miles away from where my dad was buried, there were butterflies. When I came back home in my pond in the backyard, there were, dragonflies. Yeah. They were everywhere. I have a dragonfly tattoo to memorialize my dad, right? I don't know. I don't know what it is about our human brains, you know, that
we pick things out at the moments that we need, and then we start seeing them everywhere.
Yeah, and we cling to them. And your point about whether or not they're hallucinations is a great one.
Yeah, I don't know.
We so much want to see that as a comfort, as a affirmation to what we want to believe to be true about the world, you know?
But the reality is that our brains trick us all the time, you know? And you really have to be like... really have to be diligent about is this reality or not.
I know, and I just, it's funny, a friend of mine recommended I watch Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop series on Netflix. And another friend had previously kind of poo-pooed it, you know, like, oh my god, Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, new agey bullshit science, blah 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 blah. And so I was like, well, okay, I'm gonna watch it just so I can be educated to talk about what it is they're talking about on the show, you know, and like, there's a lot of woo-woo, but then there's also an episode that talks about psychedelics, right? And the scientific studies that have been done that show that they're very helpful in helping with PTSD and trauma, right? And then there's another episode where the psychic was on that was just seemed to me to be making up all kinds of bullshit and pulling things out of the air. And yet she had a PhD woman with her who's studying these sorts of things and energy and the afterlife, right? And so it's like kind of a mind fuckery. Like, I want to believe like in reality, yes. But then you have people talking about, well, what is reality? Are we really in a dream? Is this just a simulation that someone set up? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. And then you got butterflies and dragonflies and like, how do they put their way into the equation? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how. I mean, that's an area that I would love to study in depth and try to find some answers to, but it just seems like it's one of those where you're just like grasping at air, right? Like how in the world do you even begin to kind of parse out some of that? What is consciousness? What is subconscious? What is real? What is not real? I have no idea. I don't know. And then you get that and you start talking about religion and why people choose religion and why we feel God. And I mean, I don't know. It's
the brain is very complicated. It is a complex machine.
And we have barely even begun to understand the inner workings of it. You know, it's so interesting, but at the same point, it's just like so confusing. Like, it's craziness. So your time in Israel there was a very different experience than your first time. And you come back home to finish your senior year, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how did that year go?
The year, it went fine. You know, I had taken, I was taking an apologetics course my senior year.
At the school, at the high school?
Yeah, at the high school with a teacher who I found out recently was actually grooming kids. I had never gotten a good vibe from him. I never really liked him. I mean, because he was always, I don't know, he was in his 40s and really single and just really kind of mean. But he was really smart and intellectual. And so he was teaching these apologetics courses and he didn't know what the hell to do with me at all in the slightest. He really didn't. And I remember at one point he had said, had rattled off some statistic about how, like, I don't know if this is correct or not, but it was something like 2 out of 3 of you in this room are going to deny Jesus and, you know, start living a different life. And I thought to myself, not me. Fuck that, you know, like that's not going to be me. He also put a lot of red marks on my papers. I finished out the year with a B- in apologetics.
Wow.
So there were, apparently I wasn't very good at Christian logic.
Or the Christian logic he wanted you to present to him for your assignments.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember there's a lot of C.S. Lewis and like, a lot of diagrams on the board. And then, you know, come to find out not that long ago that he's been grooming kids for a while.
Damn.
And unfortunately his family's pretty rich and had quite a foot in at that door as far as, or at that school as far as like supporting it financially and so forth. So it was a pretty big deal. So the school year was pretty good. I started back at home. My dad and I were living in a home that my grandfather had actually bought for us when I was 13. Because my dad was 10 when my dad remarried.
Okay.
And that was fucking hell. Mm-hmm. Think like Cinderella. That was me. My stepmom was awful, and she had two kids. I was living in a basement, and it was like always infested with like spiders and mice and shit. And well, not shit, but I tried to do a little cleaning. But and it was a pretty abusive situation. With my stepmom. So I remember the year that I went from sixth grade to seventh grade, when I had transferred buildings to this new high school, they had a parent night at the beginning of the school year in seventh grade. And my dad ended up never going. He dropped me off at my grandparents' house. And I guess just beforehand, he stopped at a friend's house, and things had gotten really, really bad at home. And he never made it because my stepmom was there listening to him, you know, complain about the stuff that was happening, and she went insane. And we ended up they ended up calling the police. The police told my dad he could go back to our house. I think there was an escort, and pack a bag for him and for me. So I spent the beginning of my seventh grade year, I think almost for about 6 weeks, in a hotel. Just me and my dad. That was, and you know, like, and I was like finally meeting new people. Like, they were asking me for phone numbers they could call, and I didn't have a phone number that they could call, you know, because here I am, I'm living in a hotel, and I didn't really talk about it at all. I also thought that I was the only one going through stuff because like nobody was talking about their stuff except, you know, Jesus.
Yeah.
And school, you know, there was, I remember going over to a friend's house. Like, I had a couple really close friends that I spent a lot of time at during those years with my ex-stepmom, because things were that bad. And they, you know, like, those parents had said, well, you know, why don't you come over here, spend some time with us, and so forth. So so I tried to spend as little time from the time I was 10 to 13, as little time at that place as possible. You know, and then he had finally divorced. And then when I was 13 and we're living in this hotel, my dad finally talks to my grandparents about it. You know, finally, because they don't know anything that's happening.
Yeah, right.
And my grandfather stepped in and he bought us a house. He bought me a house. You know what I mean? Wow. He really wanted to make things right. That was kind of the beginning, I think, of starting to open up to them about some of the stuff that was
going on.
In high school then, I was in that house with my dad all the way through high school, you know, from seventh grade all the way through high school. And my senior year, I started, I was on MySpace, and I met somebody on MySpace. And he was a Israeli, Jewish Israeli. And we started talking a lot, and then he started calling from Israel. And we started having some pretty great conversations, about Israel. Like, he knew how much I wanted to kind of get back to the land, and he
was very supportive of it as well. So I started like looking for places to go in Israel or things to do. Mm-hmm. And during my senior year, because I didn't want to go to college just yet. I, mm-hmm. even though like my grandparents were paying for college, mm-hmm. I didn't want to waste their money and I didn't want to waste their time. Oh. So I really wanted to try to figure out what it was that I wanted to do.
Right.
And at that point I was pretty interested in archaeology, mm-hmm. biblical archaeology. So, mm-hmm. It was 2 days after high school. I boarded a plane to Israel and
wow.
I left and I did a dig in northern Israel with a biblical archaeologist there.
Wow.
It was funny because I was kind of in prep for this interview. I was kind of going back through emails from 10, 12 years ago to kind of refresh more than that actually at this point. I'm 32 now and God, I feel like I've lived forever.
Oh gosh.
But, so I was kind of like going back through my emails, trying to refresh my memory
right.
on some of this stuff. Cause I didn't want to like make shit up, you know? Okay. So this is the real stuff that happened. So I had done this dig, for a few weeks, which was great. I loved it. And then I, started a, biblical Hebrew Ulpan, a class for people like me who were wanting to learn biblical Hebrew. And there's a it was put on by a biblical Hebrew scholar who happens to be Messianic Christian, you know, Messianic yeah. Jewish. Mm-hmm. I mean, actual, like born Jewish and then converted.
Wow.
And he was pretty awesome. You know, he knew his stuff. I'm sure he still does. But, you know, as far as being able to put Hebrew words into correct English, because mm-hmm. there's a lot that gets lost in translation and being able to like put things in context.
Wow.
Which is a fascinating way to look at scripture. Wow. Like it, wow. even though like I'm deconverted for 10 years and mm-hmm. like, it's still fascinating to me.
Wow.
Probably because like American Christianity is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's just like such a mind fuck really is, yeah. you know, and, so it's still fascinating to me to this day, all the putting the Bible into context,
wow.
Into its real context, you know?
Cool. So how long were you over there then for that time?
So let's see, 2 days after high school I left and then I had come back. I ended up meeting up with that guy that I met on yeah. MySpace. Uh-huh. He actually picked me up from the airport.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. He picked me up from the airport and, cause you know, that's not dangerous at all, but, whatever.
Well, you knew him on MySpace. I mean, come on.
And we were like talking a lot.
Yeah.
Like he would call a lot. So, you know, I felt like pretty good about going to meet him and, he was, Chabad Israeli, Jewish.
Okay. What does that mean? Chabad Israeli.
Yeah. So Chabad is a certain sect in okay. Judaism and they believe that, I think it was in the 90s. Their Messiah had come and he died I think in the 90s and so the sect of Chabad they're like
They're very Orthodox, although a different kind of Orthodox. Like even in Judaism, you say, even to like a Jewish person, you say Chabad, and they're like,
they're the black sheep.
Yeah, you know, like they're kind of the black sheep. Yeah, for sure.
Crazy cuckoo. They're like the charismatic church people, maybe Pentecostals.
Well, and it's funny you say that because they are very welcoming of people. I'm not going to say they like pull people in because they don't. However, they have Chabad houses all over the United States. That people can go to that are kind of like safe havens. Like if I go to Nevada and there's a Chabad house there, I know that it would be a safe place for me to walk into. You know, they're an interesting breed, I suppose. So he was very religious. I mean, he had the whole gamut, the tefillin and the headgear and the things you wrap around. He had the tzitzit, you know, the, he had all that stuff. And he would do his prayers every single morning, every evening.
Wow.
So.
And that was, was that very appealing to you? And like, even like, I don't know.
I was very intrigued with his dedication.
Yeah.
He had kind of a rough history himself. Mm-hmm. You know, like he was actually born in South Africa because there's a large Jewish population in South Africa.
Wow.
And so he was born there and then they moved to England. And he had been kicked out of that community. Due to some allegations, and they had then his family kicked him over to Israel, and his dad had helped set him up over there in Israel. And so anyway, he had been through a couple suicide bombings himself.
Oh my gosh.
And he had been run over by a truck because he was not professional, but like a very athletic bike rider, which in Jerusalem is pretty impressive because they've got hills all
everywhere.
Over. I mean, it's just hills everywhere.
Wow.
Like cardio's not my thing. Thanks, dude. So I started getting involved with him romantically.
Okay.
And he really kind of like took me under his wing and protected me. Oh. And he was very he very much shaped kind of the starting point for the whole deconversion process. And you know, at one point when I say we got very involved, I mean, he had asked me to marry him and all this stuff. And at that point, I was still very much Christian. And he was curious, as I was curious as well. We were mutually curious. You know, like he had requested to see The Passion of the Christ. And like, this was when the movie came out, you know, around that time. And I was like, are you sure? Are you sure? He said, yeah. And, you know, and I remember like sitting in his apartment and we're watching Passion of the Christ and he's just got tears pouring down his face, you know, towards the end. He's like, why are they doing this to him? Why are they doing this to him? And I just, you know, and I said, well, you know, this is what we believe, you know, this is why they're doing this to him. And I remember him just looking over at me. He's like, I can't believe any of this stuff. And I said, okay. And I was going, I had gotten mono from him.
I had gotten mono from him. And so I went through the whole Israeli healthcare system over there for mono. And then I ended up having to come back here to the States for a little bit. Wow. So I was back here in the States for about a month or two.
Huh.
During that time, my mom had reached out to me.
Huh.
And had asked me to come down to live with her for a little bit to try and make some money because she knew that I wanted to get back to Israel.
Wow.
And so I went, which was a massive mistake. She went into an episode while I was there and, you know, I should have aborted you.
You're like
the worst person ever and blah, blah, blah. And my stepdad at that point was just trying to do some damage control. Just a very kind, very kind man. I don't know how the fuck he ended up with her, but he's just, he died a while back. I just have like very good fond memories of him. And so he had helped me escape that situation. So I had ended up back in Ohio and I'm biding my time and found some more programs to do when I, to go back to Israel. And I did, but not before my boyfriends back in Israel had come here to visit. So he met some of my family. I had spent some time in New York City with him, and I think that was around Shavuot, so like around Easter time or something. I'm not sure. I can't remember now. Maybe it was in the fall or something. I can't remember any of it now. But so, you know, we did we did the New York City Jew thing for a little bit. And then I ended up back in Israel and I started working with, Christian Arab Israelis.
Oh, wow.
And they had started a grassroots, which is something that I love, a grassroots movement to help, I guess, kind of help convert people. It's a evangelistic type of deal.
Okay.
But it was tied up with humanitarian aid.
Oh, wow.
So, they had a bookshop in the Old City in Jerusalem. So I was babysitting this bookshop during the daytime, you know, and it's all in Arabic and there are people from all over the world that stop in.
Oh my gosh.
So it was really awesome because I'm, you know, like I had been to a lot of countries, as a kid, even though like I had gone through all this crappy stuff, I'd been to a lot of countries and I liked the travel and I liked meeting people from everywhere and having some great conversations, you know, really being exposed to stuff, you know. So I did that. And then during the daytime, there was the bookshop. And then sometimes I would do trips over to the West Bank with some humanitarian aid. You know, help do some programs. Like I was developing a newsletter for them to send out to their supporters and that kind of stuff. I was also at the same time on the weekends, I was cleaning houses for Orthodox Israeli Jews.
Oh my gosh.
So it was a very, so, you know, here I am, daytime weeks working for Israeli Arabs, Christians, and then and then working as well with Orthodox Jews, cleaning their houses. So it was a very interesting experience. So when you're a white girl with blonde hair and blue eyes, who looks ridiculously American, you tend to get treated very differently.
You know, you don't, you're not a citizen. You're pretty vulnerable. And it's the one time I can say in my life where for sure I was treated, you know, like with some discrimination and that kind of stuff. Obviously nowhere near on the level that we have it here in the US, you know, where minority groups experience it here. But over there, I was very much a minority.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And what was that? So like, what was that doing to your understanding of faith and religion and humanity as you're just exposed to all those different people from all over the world evangelizing with the Christian Arabs? Yes. Right. What, I mean, what kinds of thoughts were going through your mind during that time?
Yeah. I mean, it was a weird balance where, you know, like I'm very much in love with this, Chabad Israeli and, who, you know, is wanting to marry, also wanting me to convert.
Right.
And I wasn't really willing to do that at that point.
Uh-huh.
And then, I don't know. It was a balancing act, you know, like I was still going to church.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
And now I was still doing Shabbat.
Okay.
You know, I was still, I had like one foot in Judaism and I had, my heart in Christianity.
Yeah. And was that a requirement from the Chabad Israeli Jewish boyfriend that you convert in order for the two of you to marry?
So for him, it was, he was worried about losing his family, what left he had of his family.
Right.
Even though he had an uncle that chose a goy, a non-Jew, to marry, he wanted to get back in touch with all of his siblings. He had a ton of siblings, you know, his parents. And he had been working with a therapist to help him do all of that. So here I come and I'm very much confusing him.
Right.
And I'm confusing myself. And yet here we are, we're, you know, we're in love and it was very difficult. And I remember at one point I had gone to see his therapist just because his therapist wanted to get to know me a little bit and see what was happening. And I remember the therapist at that point had said, you know, love does not conquer all. And I remember just being like pretty angry about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here in my Christian world, love conquers all, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, like Jesus is love and Jesus conquered all. And, you know, and it made me angry that there were people trying to actively break us up.
Aww.
And eventually, obviously, we did break up. Mm-hmm. And it was devastating, to say the least, devastating. And, you know, I still very much believed in Christianity for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was still it for me. By the time we broke up though, I started getting a different worldview of things, you know, the humanitarian aid, understanding better about people,
right?
Knowing that people are people wherever they are,
yeah,
whoever they are, and having a much more kind of forgiving worldview, I suppose, than certainly what I was raised in.
Yes, right.
You know, because you can talk about forgiveness all you want in Christianity. The fact of the matter is if you're not a Christian, you're not forgiven.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so you're not saved and you're not, you know, you're not worth it.
Yeah. And did your brand of Christianity at that time have a literal hell associated with it?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I don't remember thinking much about hell at that point. Yeah. I do know that hell was real. And when I was learning about all the backgrounds of the scriptures, you know, and Jesus's mm-hmm. Jewish background and all this, there wasn't really ever much talk about hell. Mm. What I do know is that what the Bible scholar, the Hebrew Bible scholar, had told me was that a lot of times wherever you see, and it's not mentioned much, but most of the time when you see hell in scripture, doesn't mean what we've
come
to think of hell.
Version of hell.
It's a very specific place, Gehenna, which is a valley right outside of Jerusalem.
Yes.
And it used to be like where they did a lot of sacrifices, human sacrifices, animal sacrifices, and all that kind of stuff. Like today it's lush and green, and I think it's a park, and I think they have like wow. music concerts there and so forth,
gosh.
You know, like, so I'm like, well, if that's hell, that's fantastic. So but like, bring it on, you know? So I don't really remember, thinking about hell very much at that point. Now, yeah. as a kid, for sure. Mm-hmm. I was very convicted all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, sexuality was a very difficult
yes.
subject.
Yeah.
You know, and I just know like there were certain feelings that were going to send me to hell if
yeah.
you know, if I acted on them.
Right.
So that was really the only context I remember.
Gotcha.
Really.
So like when you're having these conversations with your Chabad Israeli Jewish boyfriend,
yeah.
like you weren't thinking he needed to be saved, otherwise he would burn in the fiery pits of hell. Like that wasn't your motivation for getting him to convert to Christianity. You just wanted him to know Jesus's love and
yeah.
care.
Yeah.
yeah.
I think that was the biggest thing for me. And I think there was maybe a little bit of fear for his soul, but mm-hmm. it was, you know, like in Judaism, you talk to a rabbi and, you know, there's this saying, two Jews, three opinions. And it's totally fucking true because you can talk to a rabbi and he'll spout off five different opinions about one subject.
Wow.
And he'll sit there and tell you like, there's no single one. That's it. You know?
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. And it really resonated with me.
Yeah.
So, you know, by the time we had parted ways, my ex-boyfriend and I had parted ways, I was, very much, looking at Judaism as very open-minded.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, the scriptures to them are, and by scriptures, I mean the Tanakh, the first five books mm-hmm. of the Bible, and then the rest of it, the Old Testament, I suppose. They're very, they're special, but they're not it. You
yeah.
know, like, that's not the be-all
and
all.
Like, yeah, the final answers.
Yeah. So, which to me was really fascinating, obviously, because yeah. of how I had grown up.
Yeah, it's such a different perspective compared yeah. to those of us in evangelical Christianity, where, no, our way is the way,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and if you don't believe in this, you're, I don't yeah. know, not that I ever believed that someone who was a Southern Baptist, when I was an evangelical, non-denominational person, I never thought they would be going to hell, but it was like, dude, you got some shit in your theology you need to figure out, like you're
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah.
And like, that's such a shallow, close-minded way of thinking and believing about the world. I have always appreciated that about Judaism too.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to have it all figured out. There is yeah. this mystery. Even though Christianity says it has mystery when it comes to being unable to answer any of the questions, right? Like, oh, we don't know. It's so curious. Well, young lady, I'm looking at the clock. It's 11:26 and mm-hmm. We got a lot of story left to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts about scheduling a part two? Are you cool with that?
Yeah, sure. We can do that.
Okay. Let's do that. Cause I feel like I have a 12 o'clock with, one of my daughters. And so that way we're not rushing and we can give it give the rest of your story kind of what it needs.
Okay.
The time it needs. So let's plan to do that.
Thanks for joining us today on Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time.